T-Bone, Santa, and their refrigerator boxes. For me, the best Christmas ever consisted of roaming the streets of Atlanta with a bunch of junkies and drunks, knocking on cardboard houses and handing out peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. I have to decide every single year whether I hate or I don't hate the holidays. I have pretty good memories and pretty good bad memories from my holiday life. But when weighed against the crass commercialism that's grown into fights over Tyler Perry DVDs or garbage pail kids or Tickle Me Elmo at Walmart, it's not really that hard to decide. The good ones were good, and I don't mean your typical Santa came down the chimney last night type. But when I think of Christmas in particular, I'm reminded of the most impactful one that I've ever known. It came when I was an adult. It had nothing to do with credit cards. There were no Norelco razors in the snow or polar cola bears. In the late 90s, I was director of an alcohol and drug recovery residence for homeless and indigent clients, referred primarily from the state of Georgia's Department of Human Resources and the Department of Corrections. It was the second closest that I've ever come to playing dad. It was the closest that most of these kids had ever had to a true family. The residents lived and received therapy and treatment there. There were 12-step meetings at least 5 out of 7 nights a week, and each client had the responsibility of taking care of the home. They were also responsible for their own expenses with no insurance, no mommy or daddy to pay their way for treatment and housing. It was all part of learning the skills that were necessary to live in the real world, in the sober world. This meant that most of them left the facility every day to work and to earn their own cash to meet those responsibilities. The only other requirement is that they be home to eat dinner as a family each and every night. Period. No exceptions, and it was a really beautiful thing. In that November, we began looking for ways that we as a family could give back. It was a cornerstone of the program that we understand demonstrating gratitude, not just speaking it, was an indispensable part of the journey. I knew that collectively, a group of addicts in recovery could pretty well talk our way into donations from nearly anyone that we came into contact with, so we began. We solicited coats, hats, and gloves from the local department store. We solicited promises of food from a local grocer, and there was a bakery in town as well. A local manufacturer made socks, and they gave us over 500 pairs of what they called seconds. I really never did figure out what was wrong with them. We had a dentist in the neighborhood who offered about 150 toothbrushes, and there was a local Days Inn that gave us tons of soap and small tubes of toothpaste. There were bigger lessons for all of us to learn that night. And they were on the horizon. None of us could afford to do what we saw so many do during those days in November. Most that we spoke to just wanted to stroke a check or put a gold star on their personal scorecard, their permanent record, and just be done with it. Oh yeah, can we give them a receipt for tax purposes? Yeah. Street junkies, you know, they make people kind of nervous when they're asking you for donations, and especially when they're with me, who's kind of their leader, kind of the leader of a merry band of thieves. I got praised once in a while for the idea to help those who would normally fall through the cracks until these people found out that actually the facility doing that would be in their neighborhood. I had always been of the belief that charity means love and that takes time, effort, and compassion and not just a check. So getting your hands dirty and getting right in the middle of it delivers that love face to face is a really important thing. So as the big day approached, we rounded up all the promised items and we packaged them up. Each present was wrapped with a blanket, a coat, socks, gloves, a hat, toiletries, handmade cards from the children of the residents, and much, much more. We took all the cash donations that were left over and we divided it equally among the packages, and that included about $6 in each. For 2 days prior, we made peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and we put them in those bags with chips, fruit, a Pepperidge Farm sweet treat from the outlet up the street. Finally, after all these years, I think I might be able to eat peanut butter and jelly again. So there's T-Bone Washington. He's what I always called a Brooklyn, New York street cat. Very, very skinny, very tall, 6'3". I believe that was kind of due to copious amounts of crack cocaine and way too little food. He knew the ins and outs of hustling much better, and he knew how to survive better than most I've ever known, and I'd known quite a few. I made fun of him because in his thick Brooklyn accent, he always said, "In New York, we did this. In New York, we did that." And I always quit back inquiring how he, a black man from Brooklyn, ended up with a redneck name like T-Bone, homeless in Atlanta. And on the good days, he would laugh and poke back, but it was very against his nature. He lived to be the rule breaker. He challenged me and the rules at every turn. He truly was a feral cat, wanting love and to be loved, craving a home and a chance at something better. But on some days, it was just too hard to get out of his perpetual survival mode. Life was a perpetual three-card Monty, and he had to keep those cards moving. When people got too close, he either ran or fought, and that was all he knew. Foundation House, that was the facility. We owned two Chevy Suburbans. Red was a 1982 four-wheel drive workhorse, and Blue was a two-wheel drive executive hot rod with racing stripes like Lightning and Krager Mag wheels. Both had the capacity for as many as 7 people and room for storage. And on that Christmas Eve, we filled the cargo areas with presents, bag lunches, and as many residents as we could carry. Several additional vehicles would carry the rest. And as everybody settled in their cars, I went back inside for the big surprise. When I emerged with my pillow belly, dressed as old Saint Nick, I thought that that loving group of addicts was gonna lose it. And I was blessed to ho, ho, ho all the way down the road into the big city in search of the homeless. Now, purposely, we had waited until after dark. We knew the temperatures would drop and that the shelters would close. And guided by T-Bone, who knew the cuts and hovels and homeless camps better than most of us, we began our tour of the city. Now, you got a picture of 20-plus bundled-up junkies screeching up to the curb, throwing open the sleigh doors of two SUVs, and unloading presents and brown bags from inside, singing Christmas carols at the top of their lungs with a guy dressed as Santa. We did this in the darkest and sometimes most dangerous places where people lived in exile by choice, by necessity, or simply because their illnesses led them there. It was suggested that we were crazy or running the risk of being robbed. And although both things were true, the reward of knocking on the door of a home made out of a refrigerator box and the surprise and gratitude that we were just that crazy made it all worthwhile. We knocked and people opened their doors, sleepy eyes, and the shock of seeing Santa on the street on Christmas Eve was beautiful. We interrupted sleep and dreams. We interrupted some people's drinking. We even disturbed a married couple from Cleveland who was celebrating the holidays because they'd come to Atlanta for something different, something better. You'd never believe the value of a toothbrush or a discarded hotel soap until you've lived without it. The satiation of a peanut butter and jelly is immeasurable sometimes. The smile of a little girl who didn't believe in much of anything until Santa knocked on the refrigerator box that she called home to get a new coat that was way too big and a teddy bear that helped her feel safe. Well, that was my gift that year. We were the Salvation Army of T-Bones talking about possibilities of something different, something better, in a language that these people could hear. And I have no doubt that some seeds were planted for change that night. And while I could talk about it for hours, I could never accurately describe it to its fullest. Mean-ass Brooklyn T-Bone cried like a baby more than once. He'd probably be pissed, I told you. But he was a beacon. He was an evangelist of hope. It changed his life that night, and the last I heard, he lived comfortably midway between New York and Atlanta and Virginia Beach with two beautiful little girls, a loving wife, and working a really steady job as a contractor on the naval base. Lots of things got changed that night. So that's the meaning of Christmas and of charity. The gift is in the giving. So if you're given the chance, go ahead and receive it. I'd wish you all the gift of seeing the miracles that I saw off of Peachtree Street that night, and I'd remind you that Christmas comes all year long. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas, T-Bone. I think of you often. I think of you fondly.